What's going on, guys? Another huge episode of the Almost Made It podcast coming right at you. This week we had on Formula Open driver Giuliano Senese.
We spoke about his first experience driving a Formula Open, how sim racing led him to become a driver, and have you ever wondered what drivers do when they have to go to the toilet? You'll find out.
Let's jump straight in. Welcome back to episode 10. We made it to 10, Matty boy. Yeah. Can you believe
it's
it?
Almost, man.
Of the Almost Made It podcast, proudly brought to you by Cultural Club. This week, something a little bit different. An old friend of ours. We have Formula Open driver, Giuliano Senese. How are you, my friend?
Not bad, not bad. How are you guys?
Yeah, not too bad.
Very good.
I think it was very fitting seeing as the F1 season's just around the corner.
It's actually... Yeah. Begun.
Begun, yeah. Yes. And the race in Melbourne is next week?
No, two I weeks. Three weeks.
Yeah.
Because they changed the calendar up a bit this year.
Yeah, so fitting to get a formula driver on.
That's right.
Nonetheless, how are you?
I can't complain. Just, yeah. I guess like anybody, everyone's busy. That's kind of the same thing with me.
Yeah. Should we jump straight in?
I reckon let's get into it, man. I'm keen for this one. I'm keen that the season's back, and now let's get into this episode.
Finally talk a bit F1. Let's start from the beginning. What was your childhood like? When did racing enter your life?
Probably when I was about three. I remember finding the tapes, because my dad's been into F1 for such a long time, longer than I was obviously born. I think he started when he was like in his teens, but obviously back then they only had one race here or there. But he had been taping them when he was sort of in his adulthood, taping some of the old races. And I found them when I was about 3 years old. And from there, I just chucked them on. And like, I was watching all these old races and stuff, and always loved seeing the Ferrari red. And obviously Dad was a big Ferrari supporter. So always been a Ferrari supporter. But yeah, that was my first sort of watching like Formula One. And then the first time I went to the Grand Prix, I was five. The Melbourne Grand Prix, and I haven't missed a Grand Prix since. And what am I now, 27?
It's been a while.
You were exposed to the proper sounding engines at that age, and it was like a bug, huh?
Oh yeah, it's nothing will ever. I mean, look, the engines they've got now, they are really cool. They're nice, very complex stuff. But nothing will ever beat when that sort of V10 sound came around, and it was deafening. But you could feel your whole body move with the car and the sound as soon as it went past. It was nothing beats that.
It was more like a scream, wasn't it? It was
just
the best
bumps, man.
Sound ever.
Yeah.
I remember those days. I started going to the F1, the Melbourne Grand Prix, pretty young. I think I was seven.
Nice.
And, yeah, I went through all that as well. And obviously with the V6s now, it's not the same. But still.
You know, for me, we always say this. Yeah. It's you know what's bad when the two-seater comes out with, I think, the V10?
Yes.
And that sounds better and they're not even pushing it than 20 F1 cars on the grid. Yeah. Or the Porsches come out and they sound better. And it's like, come on, man. Like,
yeah. Actually, if you guys, if you get a chance over the next, because they've got the deal with the F2 and the F3, if you get the chance to go, listen to the F3s. The F3s sound nice. Really nice.
What engine do they run?
They're a V6 as well, but they don't have turbo. They're just a straight line V6. And the sound that those things produce, I mean, the racing's great in the F2 and the F3, but the sound that the F3 produce, I reckon it's probably the best sounding engine on the track at the weekend. So
So did you start with karting? How did you get into sort of racing in terms of you had the passion for it? How did you lead down that path?
So I started karting when I was seven. I only did it for like 1 or 2 years because it just got expensive, yeah. I guess, like, especially with mum and dad. You would know more than anyone, Matty, because for anyone that doesn't really know, so I went to primary school with Matt.
Who's my F1 buddy.
So it's going a long time back. Yeah. So mum and dad had the business. So between that, it just got expensive. Even just like at the hire carts, it got expensive. So, and that's where I kind of started. So I did it from like 7 to 9. So I had a little bit of karting experience. And then from there, I've been playing soccer or football for a good part of 2 decades now. But I kind of got back into racing through sim racing, actually, when COVID happened. So when everything sort of shut down and there was no more games, nothing was happening, we just stuck inside, I got into sim racing. So got my, like, just a basic Logitech wheel and set it up from there. I started to really enjoy it. And then I pushed it further. So with I was actually a little bit lucky here too, because like I used when we were giving the COVID payments and stuff like that, I used that money and sort of invested it into myself. And so I full on set a proper simulator up, full works wheel, pedals, like three screens. So like it's, I full on went hardcore on this thing. So
you brought us over, man.
Yeah, 100%. I will get you guys over. So, but like within like a 6 month period, I went from just like this Logitech basic wheel to like a full setup. And from time to time, I'll upgrade it here and there. So like the pedals I've got now, mimic what's actually in the car to try and make it as close as I can. But yeah, like from COVID, I started sim racing, and then it wasn't long after that I was trying to find ways of doing more. I just didn't know where to start, and especially because like for a lot of kids, they've either got family that have done it or they know people, and they've got obviously got a much bigger advantage than what I've got, especially starting at what, 25?
Yeah.
So I've started very late. So, you know, I didn't know where to start, but I just sort of got emailing. My partner was also emailing people at the same time, and she managed to get in contact with, at the time there was a category here called the Australian Formula 3, which now the Australian Formula Open has basically been born out of that. But yeah, so from there they gave me a contact to a guy named Errol Gilmore, which unfortunately is not around, not with us anymore, but he was a really lovely guy. I had about a good 90-minute conversation with him. He was really awesome, gave me a big breakdown and what to expect and what to sort of gave me all the ins and outs of, and by the way, this guy I'd never met, never heard of or anything, but he was really great, and, you know, he gave me everything that I possibly could have wanted to get started. And unfortunately, he was in Queensland, so... But what he did do was he gave me a contact here, which was Tim Macro, so which is now my coach and mentor. So yeah, then I met Tim, and you know, Tim thought there's something, don't know what, but there's something. So from there, I just, you know, was in regular contact with him, was in and around his workshop, which is absolutely amazing because he's a now ex pro racing driver, but he sets up his own teams and stuff, and he's got cars coming in and out of there. He's got what, three or four F3 cars, might be a little bit more now. He's got F4 cars now. He's got GT cars. Like, you know, he deals with so many cars, and he's obviously a mechanic by trade, but does it to fund his racing, and now his racing team. But yeah, it's just from there, he's, you know, I hopped in his simulator. He was coaching me on the side for a little bit to try and get into the real thing, and you know, eventually I hopped into the real thing. So that's kind of just been the progression of path.
Crazy racing, man.
What was that like? Was it that different?
Coming, I guess, not ever being in an actual racing car before. Yeah, that first run, I won't lie, it was scary. And I knew.
I would have been shit.
And so, like, I tested in. So, what the car I was tested in was a Formula BMW, which maybe you guys might actually know of.
That, yeah.
So it's a junior category car. Was made. It's used to be massive in Europe before F3 and F.
Look, if a Formula Renault,
yeah,
back in the day,
pretty much. Yeah. And so, like, it was the biggest sort of junior category for drivers trying to come up and sort of test themselves and prove themselves. Now, not so much. You've got Formula Regional, Formula 4, Formula 3. So you've got all that pathway now sort of established. So BMW's kind of moved aside, but Tim had one. So that was his sort of testing car. So, and it's probably a little bit underpowered, but it's got quite a bit of error. So if I was to compare it to an F4 car, less power than an F4 car, more error than an F4 car. So like it's
a bit of balance.
Yeah. So around the corners, you feel it. Down the straights, you're probably a little bit down, but you know, it depends on your driving style if you could make it work or not. So but yeah, even just sitting it for the first time, and I just remember revving the thing just in the pit lane, and I felt my whole back just shake. I was like, "Oh my lord, what have I got myself into?" And I'm like, I'm just about to head into my first drive on an actual track, and this thing's just like scared the crap out of me. And I was actually there was bits of because I did it at Winton actually, so there was bits of the track. It had rained the night before, so bits of the track were a little bit wet. And I remember doing a pre-lap sort of with my coach. He's like, because he's so well known, he just knows everybody. He's just like, yeah, I'm going to go take the safety car. We're going out just before everybody goes out. And it was just me and him. We went around the track, And I remember, like, in turn four, he's like, all right, stay away from that wet patch there, because with cold tires, if you go onto that patch right now, you're going into the wall. I'm like, well then.
Give him the helmet back.
So I remember being scared, but then probably after my third, because in with testing, it works in like 20-minute blocks, and you've got 8 hours to do 20-minute blocks every hour. So you've got, what, 8 sessions in that sort of test day. And it's probably, what, just over 2.5 hours of testing. But so I remember being like, you know, first and second one, you know, quite cautious, but again, pushing the boundaries where I thought would be. Probably didn't get anywhere close to what the boundaries were, 100% being the first time. But, yeah, by, what, fifth or sixth time, I was pretty much there to where I should be at my first test day, which was pretty good. But, yeah, it was kind of just a big learning process, especially going from simulator, or even go-karting wouldn't do it justice, but simulator to the real thing. Whilst in the dry weather, it's quite close, but there's just many things that it doesn't account for, which is a lot of the shaking, the movement, and G-force.
How quick are we talking in the Formula BMW?
I think Winton doesn't have a lot of long straights. A lot of it's turns. So I think the main straight I got to 180, 190 down the straight, but I think I was cornering at some of the corners at like 150 or something.
That's
so
unreal, man. That's the aero.
Yeah, the aero was just holding you down. You don't really know it until like you're in it.
It's like we always say to people, like, with EF1, you don't realize until you're there looking at how fast they take that like corner.
Yeah.
The aero, the impact aero has and all that. Like, was that what impressed you the most? What impressed you the most? Was it braking, acceleration?
I think the braking is probably the most, because like that, you put your foot down and it's not like a gradual stop in your car. Like, this thing's just stopping and you're going forward. So it's like, you know, luckily you've got this Hans device here with your neck, because otherwise you're just going that way.
It's crazy.
That's the thing that freaks me out the most.
How they stop.
Like, yeah, of course, they're quick. They're Formula One cars, but just how quickly they stop.
A lot of people say that that's the biggest thing they notice when they jump in from like an F3 to an F1. It's interesting.
Crazy. Yeah. I'm really interested about, like, you know, you're saying pushing the limits. Where do you find the limits? Like, how do you get the most out of the car?
That's a good question. I'll let you know when I figure that one out.
to where you are now.
I guess experience, which is something that I've been trying to build up. I guess bravery and courage would be the biggest thing, and probably tricking your brain. Your brain will do funny things to say, like, okay, we're in danger, but, you know, even though you are technically going faster than what you probably should be, but like, and you are in danger, more in danger than what you would be, you know, in general, which I'd probably argue that the road is more dangerous than an actual track. But your brain's just like, okay, break now. And it's kind of just like, well, no, the car can go a little bit later. You can brake a little bit later and it will stop. Yeah. And it's just, I guess, training and working out where that sort of limit is. I mean, I'm lucky that I haven't had an off yet. So, like, I still, at that point, if you haven't had an off, you're not going quick enough. So I haven't really discovered where that limit is just yet, but it's getting there.
Yeah. So. Do you sort of put your helmet on and you're just like, fuck it? Like, if I go into the wall, I go into the wall.
Bit of Verstappen, Kvyat style.
Aggressive. It
might take me a while to get there, but especially because it would be fine if I had unlimited funds.
I was about to say that's thing I was going to say.
If I had unlimited funds, it would be fine. Because it's coming out of my paycheck. So everything I save, you know, there's got to be an element of caution to it. If I had partners and stuff like that could fund it, you know, a little bit of those shackles could be undone. But at the same time, you don't exactly want to wreck the car.
Yeah, just smash it in.
So, it's, you know, there'll be days that, you know, especially with the next test day that I go and do, you know, I'll try and push towards the limit, but there will always be this element of, if I wreck it, what's my bank account going to look like tomorrow? Like,
see, people don't realize that, man.
No.
When like a junior, they're like, oh, why doesn't he push? Why doesn't he go, you know, dive in? Because, man, he's paying for the damage. You know, it's not like F1, another million, you know, just chuck on a new front wing. It doesn't work like that.
No.
Pretty much. I mean, again, a lot of, I guess it's there's a lot of people in my position and there's a lot of people in the position of money at the end of the day. And for those ones there, they can afford to go and, you know, if they wreck the car, they wreck the car at the end of the day. They got someone's money's going to go and pay for it. In my case, and probably so many other drivers as well, and even with Tim as well, even though Tim's a pro racing driver, you know, a lot of it came out of his bank account. So whatever he made and earned and what he got from sponsorship, he had to be cautious of not wrecking the car because, you know, he needs the car. If he can't afford to replace a part, you know, he's got to be more cautious. So, and that's a pro racing driver, by the way. So it's one of those things that, like, you just got to be mindful, especially if you've got limited funds. If you've got unlimited funds, then, you know, go as you wish. But I'm on the other side, so.
Saying all this, what is the goal? Like, what is the end goal for you?
There are so many, but I think ultimately I just like to go and participate in a race weekend. Whilst I've only been in testing so far, like, I just being able to go and participate in a race weekend is goal number one. If we can go and do a whole season, goal number two. You know, it's going to be one of those things where, you know, like, yeah, it's going to be a small. It's not going to be like how when we were playing soccer, you know, the ultimate goal was to make it. I think I put too much pressure on myself and things weren't working out. So when, especially when I turned 18 and, you know, I was playing NPL seniors, well, about to play NPL seniors, but then I copped a giant injury. So, like, then you've got a whole wave of depression because, you know where you should have been, but you're not there. And I think I'm just going to remove that aspect of, you know, trying to push myself to where I think I should be and just enjoy the ride. And, like, this was a dream that I've had even before I started soccer. So, like, just see where it goes. If I race, perfect. If not, I still own the car. I've got other goals that I can do with that too. So that part will be, you know, it'll be working along the basis of trying to work out where we want to go with it. But at the same time, racing, to go and race is the first goal.
And what does that look like? How do you make that happen?
Whatever I can do to save. I mean, full-time job, I've got a second job. So, like, there's fortnights where I'm working like 120 hours a fortnight. So I'm doing like 60 hours a week, if not more than that, to try and save up between full-time work and lifeguarding. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if it means I get 4 hours of sleep a night, I get 4 hours of sleep a night trying to save up. But so that's on my end. So that's what I can control. Having people that want to support and partners will help. So I need, you know, sponsorship just like any other person. So that's the more uncontrollable stuff. So however I can make it work, I can make it work. But if I can make it with myself, then I'll try and do that. But the main goal, at least for this year, is to get one race weekend, if I can fund that myself. And the last race weekend, I think, for the Formula Open is Phillip Island, which would be a stellar race to go and do your first one.
Yeah,
so if I can save aside, you know, 10, 11, 12 grand or whatever it costs for that weekend just for my own money, then I can get a race weekend as well.
There you go.
That's unbelievable.
So it's, yeah.
And then from there, from there, you do your race weekend. And then what comes next? Is it like, how do you move up the ranks? Is it just everything has to be self-funded? Like, how does it, you know what I mean?
Yeah, sponsors, I mean.
Sponsors, how does it work?
Sponsorship will open many more doors, especially with open wheel categories here. There's not a lot of them. Like, here there's so many, like, you got the V8s, you've got the Toyota 86 series, you've got the Aussie supercars. Like, you've got so many different touring car categories here, but for open wheelers, there's not many. And there was the S5000, which would have been the top level open wheeler, but that's not running this year now just because they just had a funding issue. So they're not running it this year. So really, the Australian Formula Open, which is what I'm looking to compete in, is now your number one open wheel category. But there will be a lot of things down the pipeline that will start to open up because the category is doing really well. It's only in the second year and it's doing really, really well. So if it continues on its path as going, there will be more categories. Actually, I think there might be an Australian Formula 4 that's actually kicking off this year, but it's in its infancy stage. So depending on how that goes. But again, like, there will be things that hopefully will open up later down the track. But for now, it's really just starting with a category. And then if I do well, if I enjoy it, there's always the possibility that we can go and do like Formula Regional in Asia or Formula Regional in Abu Dhabi and stuff like that. In,
that'd be cool.
That's cool.
Yeah, yeah, which they, I think they finished their series, because I tend to watch a lot of that grassroots stuff because it's streamed on YouTube, which is really cool, actually. I tend to watch that stuff, and they think they finished last week. So, you know, they run over that sort of summer period, and some of those drivers hop off into F3 and the others just hop into Formula Regional. So, yeah.
Interesting. Cool. So tell us a bit about the car. You said you owned it, yeah?
Yes.
So what are the specs like? What are you running? Like, what type of cars would you, what type of car would you drive if you were to race this weekend?
So it would be the Formula BMW.
It would be exactly that?
Yeah, it would be that exact car. So it runs a BMW motorbike engine. The fuel that we're running is, I think, is ALF from memory. Or no, actually, no, it's just 98, to be honest. It can run on 98, which makes it really efficient in terms of money. So, and that's been the biggest thing, the biggest factor, is trying to find ways of making racing more efficient in terms of money, less costs, you know, at the end of the day, more cost effective, I should say, is the word, because the budgets get out of hand. I think like Super 3 car, like their budget's like $1 million, and that's like tier 3 at supercar level. So
that's insane.
Just trying to make it as cost effective as you can is the primary goal. So like with the BMW, I'm really fortunate that, you know, I was lucky enough that my coach, because it was his car, he was selling it, because he's gone and bought another F4 for the Australian Formula Open. So, you know, he was selling it. So he gave me a really great bargain on it. There was things that I had to, you know, get fixed on it as well, just due to wear and tear of the parts, but made things a little bit easier. So owning the cars, you know, it's already brought down. So my test day when I did it a while ago now, my test day was $5,000 just to hop in it for 2 hours.
That's so full of joy.
Yeah. Like it's, you're talking about some, just, crazy, that's just a day for just to go testing. So like, so big money, which if I had more of, I'd go and do more of it. Yeah. So, but it, at the same time, so like him selling the car, you know, it created an opportunity, which I jumped on. So it's already brought down the cost of my test days to, it's less than half of that now. So bit by bit, what I'm trying to do is get little, like the trailer, having your own trailer, your own car to tow it and stuff. So bit by bit, it'll just bring down the cost of those test days. So what I want to try and do is if I can go testing for like $600-$700, then I'll get it to that point.
Because,
you know, it's mine at the end of the day. Like, definitely. I'll go and do that.
Yeah.
Obviously, there'll be other things I'll need to pay for. But at the end of the day, like, the goal is to get it as cheap as I can so I can run more. Mm-hmm. So I'd rather get things right first than just go and jump into it and, you know, outlay money that I just don't have. So if I can get to a good point, we can go on it. Like, I can go every fortnight, essentially, hop in the car at least, you know, once a fortnight, twice a month, you know. We get in there pretty quick.
Where do you test that? Winton all the time?
Winton is the main one we go and test because it is the cheap. It's one of the cheapest tracks to run, which is what, in Benalla, which is what, 2.5 hours from here? Yeah. So it's the cheapest track to run. You do have Calder Park, which is on the Calder Highway, 20 minutes from me. But the problem is they need to resurface that track. So we're kind of waiting a little bit for that to get done. But then again, it'll be another cheap track that I can test at and super close by. Like, don't have to travel 2.5 hours down the track.
Definitely.
So that will be, you know, where we'll go and test. When Phillip Island rolls around, if I can do one or two times there before the actual race at the end of the year, then we'll go and do that.
That'd be cool. So on a race weekend, what about like a pit crew and everything else? Is that included in the cost, or
this is what we're trying. So what I'm trying to work out is, so I've been actually really fortunate again meeting Tim. It's opened many other doors. So like I met my race mechanic's also become a really good friend of mine, and we've sort of jumped in this together. So he's my race mechanic. So he's going to operate on the car where it needs to do, get it to where it needs to be. But he'll also bring with him some people, whether they're volunteers, whether I have to pay them. You know, it'll be determined on race to race weekend. Whether we go with Tim on the race weekend is a different story. It'll come down to cost. But it just depends. So like he'll organize that sort of side of it. But in the meantime, it's me and him together. So I've been really, really lucky.
If you need two pretend team principals,
100%.
We'll come along.
Hey, come down. But,
in saying that, how many tyres would you go through? How many sets would you go through a race weekend?
This is that other thing.
Because, like, I've always wondered, you know, in F1, obviously, you get allocated.
Yeah.
Just like, But obviously you're paying for it, yeah? So what would, to be competitive, how many sets of tyres would you need?
Well, the category's made a rule where to try and keep costs down, you run two sets of tyres and one set of wets. So you've got two sets of dries, one set of wets.
And you and can this, alternate with them.
Yeah, so your first set of dries, is you'll use them in practice and you'll use them in qualifying. Then your second set you'll use in race one and two, and then your last set that you use for qualifying, you'd use for race three. That way you can keep the costs down. You're only using two sets of tyres.
Just trying to use your tyres on all the time.
Yeah, because like there are certain teams that 100% could just bring tyres.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It becomes unfair then.
Yeah, but if you want to pack out the category, you need to make it accessible to everybody as much as you can in any case. So if you limit the set of tyres, you know, it makes, you know, a set of tyres for me are probably just over $1,000. But for an F3 car, an F4 car, they're a little bit more expensive than that. And if you whack, you know, three or four sets on those, you know, you've got a whole test day just done in tyres. So, it's
what tyres do you use?
So the category partner is Giddy Tyres. So okay. They're
so it's the whole category uses the same tyres. It's all the same manufacturer. Yeah, okay, I understand.
Which is pretty cool.
It's better. As in, there's less variables.
Yes.
Because then they could be having tyres made for their car, like how we saw in F1 back in the day. You know, the Bridgestone
and
Michelin top thing. But
everyone's using.
So this is unbelievable. Like these people don't realise the cost. Like these, like. And these F1 drivers make these, they take these risks from young. Oh, some of them have the money, some don't, but
most
look,
of them.
you're also investing a lot of this money. For example, say if you were to race every weekend, but you're not guaranteed like an F1 seat.
Yeah.
So it's like, so you can see a passion for it, you know what I mean? And it's crazy to see like that, how hard it is, man. But obviously the passion's what keeps you going, the love for it.
Yeah.
I wish you all the best. Hopefully we'll see you in Phillip Island.
Thanks.
Yeah, very soon.
Yeah, just quickly, if there's any sponsors watching, we want to jump on an up-and-coming racing team, get on.
Definitely. Why not? We've got to get our logo on there one day.
100%. We'll chuck it on.
Yeah, 100%. That'll be gross.
The new livery for the next season.
Quick break from the episode. Just like to say thank you very much for all the constant support, comments, likes, shares. It means a lot to us.
If you're not already, please make sure you're following us on Spotify. It would mean the absolute world to us.
Now let's get back into the episode.
Hamilton to Ferrari, thoughts?
All right. If you had asked me this 10 years ago, I would have been like...
He's going to say the same thing I said.
Yeah. Yeah, you would have said...
Probably not. I don't think it would have suited him or the team. I think over the last maybe 4 years, he's matured a lot. At least I've been watching enough to see that he's grown quite a bit. I think his personality sort of suits the team a lot more now. So I think he'll do really great things there. Whether it's – he might not necessarily win a title. I don't know because there's so many factors involved in that. But I think he'll teach the team what they've been missing at the end of the day. When they lost – Michael Schumacher, they obviously kept part of that squad, which, you know, it got them through 2007, which Kimi Raikkonen won, and then they nearly won in 2008, which we had many conversations about in primary school with Felipe Massa. But after that point, they'd lost a little bit of their, I guess, I won't say passion, but I guess their main reason for winning at the same time. So, like, They kind of just lost how – no, I take that back. How to win a championship is probably the word to use. So I think he'll probably bring that back because, you know, most successful driver, literally the most successful driver all the time. So if you're not going to learn from that, then there is no hope.
But let's be honest. Everyone wants to drive for Ferrari too. Yes. So I think it's also for him a challenge.
Yes.
It's like another spark, you know, for him. I think he's gotten a bit stale at Mercedes.
100%.
And he's like, man – What have I got to lose? I'm probably not going to win the championship here this year. Let's say Red Bull's going to dominate, and it's like, well, I'll get the chance to go to Ferrari.
Pretty much.
But another thing that I want to get your take on is how do you think he's going to pair up with Leclerc? Because they're both going to want to be the top dogs.
I think who's number one?
How's the dynamic going to work there?
I think it'll be an interesting start thing to see. I feel like they'll let them race at least the first year until, you know, I think Leclerc will establish himself this year. And not that he's not established, but I think he will really 100% push for that. But I think it'll take Hamilton at least a season to sort of embed himself in the team because he's going to have to not necessarily learn Italian full on. Like, he's going to have to learn
definitely
Italian in general. So he's going to have to learn a different way of doing things because he's been with Mercedes for even when McLaren was still
his
Mercedes.
Whole, even his junior career.
So, you know, he's only ever been with a Mercedes-powered car for such a long time. So, like, he's going to have to go to a completely different team, a different country. So he's not in England anymore because that's where Mercedes is based. So he's going to have to go a completely different country. He's going to have to learn a different style of living. So I think it'll take him a year. After that, I'm not sure. I think it's probably anyone's guess. I feel like Leclerc has a lot of maturing to do because whilst I reckon he'll beat him on a one-lap pace, he probably makes one too many errors that he probably shouldn't be making. And hey, look, it's not just his fault because he's trying to push half the time a car that he's trying to demand more of a car than it should be giving to try and fight the Red Bulls. So not entirely his fault, but you know, he's going to have to make sure that Hamilton won't be making those mistakes. So he's going to have to make sure that his mistakes are sort of cut out to a minimum. He's going to have to really look after his tyres because that's one thing Hamilton can really do. He knows how to look after tyres and get the best out of them.
Complain about his tyres.
falsely.
I was about to say.
Every time I've got nothing left, and then he purple. He's full of shit, in my opinion. Yes. when he's got the red on, I like him.
To be honest.
Because I'm not a great fan of him, to be honest with you.
I was a little bit in shock. Because I remember, obviously, the rumours came out. And I'm like, this has been happening the last 4 years. Whatever.
True, but every year there's something comes out.
And then I got up for work, and it was like 4 a.m.
Yeah.
And I saw it properly that it had been confirmed and I sent it out and I'm like, I actually can't believe it. Like, I don't know how to feel right now.
It was, you went to bed, I remember early, and there was the rumors like Sky started, it's not done, but it's like when Sky start saying this, it's like, man, they got to have some sort of knowledge. They're not, going to just like full broadcast and, you know, they got Brundle in the studio and everything. Then I was like, nah, it's not going to happen. Then when Ali woke up and we had the inbox and we were talking and I'm just like, honestly still don't know how to feel about it.
I think it took a while.
As long as he wins, obviously.
Like, as in, he's gotten a bit better as times of, you know, but I was personally, I've always respected him as a driver.
Yeah.
But I've always been a bit turned off for his off the track antics and all the, you know, other bullshit. I'm like, I want to watch F1, man. I'm not here to politics and this and that. So that's another thing. I hope that he stamps out and just focus on racing. But then it's like, once he has the red on, it's like you just, you can hate him, but he's like, man, if you win with us.
I think he's going to really look forward to that, to be honest.
Yeah. And I think he's going to relish on it.
Yeah, 100%. I think, as you said, it's every driver looks, you know, you enter F1, you take three things off your bucket list. Win a race, win a championship, drive for Ferrari.
And if you can do all that with Ferrari, then it's just retire.
Even perfect. So like, he's off track stuff, as you said.
He's calmed down a bit, but that's the main reason I wasn't a big fan of his.
I still think he'll bring that stuff to Ferrari, not in a bad sense. I think he'll really populate the brand of Ferrari.
100%.
They'll shoot up because I think their stocks went up like 10 million or 10 billion or something.
And also with like the fashion side, you know, like the Ferrari range, I think he'll do a lot of good work with that, and he'll probably collaborate with his own brands. I think there'll be a good off-field marketing.
You can't keep your dog. Track. You can't keep your dog vegan if you live in
New York. First thing he's got to do is try prosciutto, man. That's the first thing. Otherwise, I'm looking forward to it. Obviously, being a Ferrari fan, but even just the hype around the sport's going to be insane.
Yes.
So it's going to bring a lot of hype, and everyone wants to know what he's going to do. Like,
Melbourne is going to be a sea of red next year.
I reckon Silverstone will too, man.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, 100%. Like
talking about hype, what are your thoughts on Drive to Survive? I know there's the purists aren't fans, and you know there's a fair few mixed reviews, and obviously now you can't get a ticket to the F1 anymore, which pisses me off. But what do you think?
Norris fans now as well, huh? All of a sudden. All the girls are Lando Norris fans.
Look, I can see the attractions. I'm not going to deny that. But look, I think it's been really great for the sport because Formula One was really stagnant for a while and they were trying to grow a sport that even manufacturers couldn't really justify going to join because, you know, like, Let's for instance, Audi. Audi's coming in what, 2026. So, you know, they'll be the team name next year. But this year they're not. They obviously stake F1. But the 2026, they'll have their own power unit. Now, if you did 10 years ago, there was no way 80 was good. What were they going to join for? They've got Le Mans that they compete in. They compete in the GT3s. You know, there's so many different categories that they compete in. Why would they want to go and spend $1 billion to be probably eighth on an F1 grid?
Yeah.
You know, like, it's just one of those things that Drive to Survive has just made things more accessible to fans, which has brought money into the sport. And obviously the whole cost effectiveness of the sport, bringing down costs to make things more competitive. Maybe it's been a good thing. Maybe they probably could add a little bit more to that. I think I always argued that what they're actually spending, even though it's a ridiculous and obscene amount of money, I think it maybe stifles a little bit of creativity. Not that they're not creating, but I think they could push the boundaries a little bit more. Just an even extra 20 million euros could be, you know, the difference between something revolutionary and not. Mm-hmm. So, you know, maybe they can, that's not my own personal opinion though. So maybe they could increase the budget a little bit, maybe not. But, you know, Drive to Survive as a whole has created this whole atmosphere. And as you said, you can't get tickets to the Australian Grand Prix anymore. And if you do go, you know, not dissing the general admission, but because I used to love going to the general admission, but I don't really think it's worth it. Again, personal opinion, others will vary.
Yeah.
I'm just a pure, you know, Formula One fan that wants to see the racing, not really there for the, you know, all the big show.
Yeah.
It's great, but I want to see the cars. And if you are that sort of person, general admission's probably not for you at the end of the day. So, and I think with how popular it is, there's just nowhere to move in the general admission area.
It's rubbish. So, that once before.
Yeah, but it's great for the sport at the end of the day. It's, you know, the sport's got so many fans. What they're trying to do is turn it into like football or soccer at the end of the day, which, again, not a bad thing. There's a lot of money being circulated in it, and I really love to see that it brings more teams in because I think they need an 11th and 12th team.
I do think that as well.
I think if they go in 13th and 14th, I think you're probably looking possibly too many. I don't think there's ever been more than 28 cars on the field of F1, but that was going years ago. Only recently they had 24, I think it was like 10 or 12 years ago. I think that's a good number, but it creates so many different opportunities too, like F2 drivers. Like, you know, the last two F2 drivers have won the championship and are not in the sport. So, like,
that's another talking point. And it's not like with football, you know, you sign a contract, you get promoted. With that, it's like you're not guaranteed. Even you can win every title leading up, but you're not guaranteed a seat.
Piastri.
There's so many different aspects to it, you know?
Yeah, Piastri is the best example of that because, like, he had to sit out for a whole year, even though he was the number one junior for so many years. He's won everything.
Yeah. I agree with you that, you know, it has brought a lot of popularity to the sport, I think. And also, it's given, like, the drivers a personality.
Yeah, you know a bit more about
because
them.
Because I think, you know, to non-fans, the first thing they say is, oh, it's boring.
Yeah. They just don't watch this boring. They
just why would you sit there for 2 hours and just
not
watch
athletes
cars go?
Or they're not these.
But it's given another dynamic, and people start to actually understand the ins and outs of the sport, which I think is really nice.
Yeah. That part's been really great about the series that they've given so much ins and outs of the sport, even just the demands of what it asks on a person.
Definitely.
Some people just don't realize that, you know, these guys are training, you know, 8 or 9 hours a day. You know, they live. What you would do for a normal work day is probably their workout day, and then but then they've got sponsors that they've got to deal with. They've got social media, traveling, so you know their life is all about the sport. And most people don't really see that. They're just like, oh, you just go around driving in cars. But well, these guys that are driving around in cars have to be literally not quite astronauts, but you know they've got to be some of the fittest people on the earth to drive these things because the demands of the car
on the body.
You know, a normal person, you know, would be just tired after going one lap around. They couldn't even probably take off in the car half the time. So, and trust me, I would know.
And at the end of the day, what people don't realize is that they're risking their life every time they get in that seat.
It's safe now, but exactly. No, no, as in what?
It's more safe.
Let's be honest. Let's be honest. Some of these crashes that they just walk away from now, 30 years ago, 35 years ago, they're deadly, man.
Yeah, no chance.
So, like, as in, it has changed, but people forget to because it's like, it's they're safe now, but they are risking. We saw with Grosjean, man. Grosjean, what happened there? Like, we all thought, man, the worst when it happened.
When I saw that, to be honest, 30 years ago, he would have been in pieces.
Like, do you ever come to terms with that when you get in?
Yes and no. I think being a kid, that sort of thing is probably pushed, removed a little bit from your mind.
Yeah.
Being an adult, there's a little bit more, not saying that it's, you know, taking over, but like it is there. But at the same time, like you've got to, you've got to understand that you're doing this sport, that yes, there's a potential for that thing to happen, but at the same time, like, it happens on the road so many days a week. Like,
yeah,
half the time, you know, and this is where my point before was, you know, I'd say that the track is more safe than the road, because on the road, you've got people doing left, you know, they're going left, right, they've got so many different directions that they're going to do. They're pulling out of zones, you know, they're doing things that are illegal, you know, like on the track, everybody's got a target, and it's just to get from point A to point A again as fast as you can go.
Yeah.
So, you know, in that sense, you know, when you look at it that way, you can justify it.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes and no to your question.
Yes, you got to put it at the back of your mind, because it's going to affect your performance too.
100%.
Yeah,
exactly.
So, yeah, it makes sense.
Another quick one for me, because, you know, I don't really get to ask these questions to too many people, so it's nice when we can have a chat about this. It's probably, I don't care if you're bored, but
just better start watching your phone.
getting rid of refueling, better or worse for the sport? Safer.
It is safer. I think you see less incidents in the pit lane, which is good. What it has done is taken away a certain strategic element to the race.
That's what
100%. Yeah. So that was something that it always, you know, and the best drivers would get the most. Michael Schumacher, for example, you know, if he had 6 liters of fuel and he'd get 6 liters of fuel out of that car, like, and he would just pump in times that, like, nobody else could do. And I think when you start the race at not max capacity, because, you know, they try and underfuel the cars to make them as light as they can. But, you know, the tires are dealing with a car that's super heavy. And then at the end of the race, you know, the car's really light. Your tires can 100% push more, but you've got to survive that, you know, first half of the race to be able to push the car to what it really could do. So, you know, tires are one strategic side. But I think refueling would, you know, enhance that, because even then the tires as well, Pirelli's done a great job, but I don't think they're as good as they could be. And so, like, you know, some half the time the drivers are just like, well, I can't go for this overtake, because if I go for this overtake and I don't make it work, I don't have tires for the next 20 laps and I've got to do 20 more laps on these things. So half the time they're kind of just like scale-o-tricks, where they just sit there because they've got to look after the tire. The tire can't do what you want it to do. If you put refueling in that, you know, you only need a set of tires for maybe, let's say, 12 laps if you're only going to got 12 laps of fuel in.
Yeah.
Bang the hell out of it, like, for 12 laps and then see where you go.
Yeah.
Adding on to that, do you think that's another question I want to ask? Because, you know, we see a lot of it that it becomes like just a tire managing game, yeah? And it's like, do you think that even like with the aero, the dirty air, all that type of thing with the tires, do you think that it's too much now? That we've gone too far in terms of, just too much. When you look at racing, you see a lot of them, it's like they're more worried about tire management, fuel management, this management, instead of like
racing.
Do you think it's gone too far, or is that just something we can maybe adjust and certain things can be changed?
I think if you had asked that in 2021, yes. The regulations now obviously designed to reduce that. I think, you know, they opened Pandora's box a long time ago, and I don't think it's ever going to close.
Yeah.
So they're not going to just all of a sudden remove aero. It's going to get more.
It's going to just keep developing. We see it in MotoGP now. They're becoming F1 cars, basically, in MotoGP. It's crazy.
I think the one thing that they need to work on is trying to find a way of, you know, putting this aero on this car, but it not affecting, it is the biggest challenge.
Of course.
Not affecting the car behind. So, like, you're trying to design the fastest car in the world. The guy behind you, who gives a damn?
Yeah, you're not worrying about
who gives a damn.
Yeah, exactly, 100%.
You know, it's trying to find that fine balance, and if they can do it in a way that they make the fastest car in the world, but the guy behind you is also trying to make the fastest car in the world, and he's not affected by the turbulence that's coming out of your car, then you are seeing two of the fastest cars in the world at their peak trying to go head-to-head.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, it's the balance that they're trying to do, and I don't know whether they'll ever get there. I think they can get as close as they can. Getting there is a whole other story. Yeah. So, but yeah, look, if you watch the F2 and the F3, you see much better racing because they've got not a lot of that turbulence.
Very similar cars, similar aero. So
if you either go for the best or you go for entertainment. And I think Formula One's obviously has always been trying to find the balance between the two. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's just the way that the sport works at the end of the day.
Do you reckon you could drive an F1 car? How hard is it, honestly?
That's the kid in me would say yes. The realistic person on it would say at least not yet,
One lap. You get it going by, yeah? Or you're not?
Because we've seen. I'd say yes.
We've seen Hammond and all. You've seen that?
He just kept stalling.
It needs to be driven. Yeah. Like, it was at like 4,000 RPM and it just stalled or something, wasn't it?
Yeah. No, you're not wrong. It needs to be really high RPM to go. Yeah. You're not wrong. The other thing as well, when Hammond tested, those cars didn't have the turbo, the electrical systems.
He was
to get
in
the
Renault, wasn't he?
Yeah, Alonso's replica, yeah?
Yeah, like 2006, yeah. I think it was. Yeah. Now, those things had traction control.
Yeah.
These things don't. So if you'll spin those wheels up and you're just going to go, all you're going to do is go round. So I'd like to say yes, but let's just say yes. Yeah. Let's just say yes.
We love the confidence.
I think it's more just everything on the wheel, like getting used to everything. Because do you have all the gadgets on your – you wouldn't, would you?
In my car or my CS?
Steering wheel.
In the BMW.
No, it's very basic sort of stuff.
Yeah, that's another thing. It just baffles me, their steering wheel, man.
Yeah. on my car, you've got just the basics, you know, the button to talk to your race engineer, the button to check all the fuel pressure, the oil pressure, all that sort of stuff. That's it.
It's unreal. When you actually think about it, just the steering wheel in itself, their mental capacity is like unbelievable.
They don't even look.
And like be able to then talk to the engineer.
Mm.
Also, look at where you're going, braking, you know, guys overtaking, you know, trying to defend. And exactly, this is all happening at 300 kilometers an hour.
It's
unbelievable.
A lot of it's muscle memory. Because I don't have that many buttons on my simulator, but on my sim, I've got quite a fair amount of buttons on it.
Yeah.
But it's just muscle memory. Like you're in it and you're driving away and, you know, you're just clicking it, knowing it's there.
Yeah.
But it's just one of those things.
To get there.
Yeah, it does take a bit of time before you adjust. Okay, that's that button there. You know, even now I still look sometimes. It's just like, am I pressing the right button? Just to like double check.
Mm.
So like even, you know, you still second guess sometimes, but most of the time you can get away with, you know, you're going around the corner and you're pressing the button and it is the right button. So
How many laps would one of your races be, roughly?
For the Formula Open, what have they got now? I think it's half an hour races. So it depends on the track. I think they just did Sandown because I was supporting my teammates there. So they did Sandown and I think they did, I think it was 24 laps, I think.
So say you're at lap 16, you're in front, you're about to piss your pants.
Do you piss yourself?
What do you do?
Hold it like you would in a soccer game.
Do you have a drink? Do you have water?
No.
Okay, so
keep the weight of the car down.
I've always
I've heard some drivers say they have pissed themselves.
I'm not surprised.
I think it was
Jenson
Button off the top of my head.
But I wanted to ask a real one if this is true.
I actually wouldn't be surprised to be honest.
Well, yeah, maybe a 65 lap race.
Yeah.
It's a long time.
That extra 500 grams as well.
Yeah.
Weighs the car down.
True. And then you win.
It's all right.
It'll evaporate in there anyway.
That's all right. Who's your tip this season?
The Ferrari and me would just like to say Leclerc for the sake of it.
Man, I hope so.
But realistically, I think Red Bull's just too far ahead. I think
Verstappen.
Yeah, it's just, you know, they've gone and I'd like to just say they just basically just said like F you to Mercedes and copied their design. Pop. Yeah, their zero side pop and just gone, I can do this better. They've gone and done it better. And like the cars, it looks quicker. It looks more stable. So it's kind of like, you know, we're just going to go and do what you guys did, but better. And look, I get why they did it because they're saying if we didn't change philosophy, everybody would have been like a couple tenths behind us. You know, it'd be much closer than what it was, which would be great for the sport.
Yeah.
So if they didn't change, you know, they probably would have been, you know, a much bigger fight. So if they took a risk. And I think the risks probably will have paid out, but we won't know till Sunday.
Yeah.
And even then, I wouldn't even say Sunday would be the time to determine. I'd say by the time they get to round four, you'd really have an idea because you've gone over so many different tracks.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, Bahrain, very different track to Saudi Arabia, even though they've got those long straights.
Yeah. Japan, proper race circuit.
Yeah. So they'll know come round four whether that's really, really working.
One thing I have to ask you, with Ferrari, we've seen, look, it's testing, it's practice. By all accounts and what I've seen from the times, race tyre management seems to be a little bit better with race pace from what I've seen. And Leclerc and that seems to be saying the same thing. Do you think this year, I'm not saying we're going to beat Red Bull, but do you think we're probably that second force that we could, you know, try and at least when we can fight the Red Bulls? The Mercs looked quick this morning, but from all accounts, we look to be better in race trim because we've always had that fast one lap speed and the quality speed, but it's always in the race. We chew our tyres, that type of stuff. Do you think we've made a step forward?
I think in that aspect, yes. Again, it's going to be one of those things they won't really know until they're under.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sure they know what they've done.
Yeah.
We won't know because we don't – look, it's a hard thing with testing. You don't know how much fuel they've got on.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't know what rake they're running. You don't know what setup they're running. They probably could have been running heavy fuel load with, like, Melbourne spec on the car, and it's like, with different tyres. So like, you can make a prediction, but you won't know till Sunday. I think – from what they're saying, they seem pretty chirpy about it. Yeah. They seem pretty happy about it.
We won't know until Sunday morning. Yeah.
I think they'll be up there listening because I do listen a lot to Sky Sports. I listen to the race podcast as well a lot. And based on what they're saying, you know, they reckon as well Ferrari will probably be the number two team with Mercedes not far behind.
Yeah.
It's now that we're Aston Martin and McLaren are because
– interesting.
They've gone.
They've not had like the top sort of testing anything, but they've been quite quiet.
Yeah, so and that's the thing. Sometimes knows what they're hiring
at the end of the day, because you know Aston were pretty quick last year.
Then they just halfway through they just there's a few reg things they had to change. Remember, wasn't it with the floor and that?
Yeah, but it was more of a development thing. I think
they just stopped developing.
Not even they built the car to where it was, but. Probably didn't really know which way to go for development would be the best. So they were trying so many different things and many things which just weren't working. But then come the end of the season, they got back on track to where they needed to be. So it's just going to be one of those things. And that's going to be key to this year. It's the development war because
exactly.
What they do this year, essentially next year, the car we see is probably going to be one or two little changes that they make from Abu Dhabi because they're not going to do anything to next year's car. All the focus will be on 2026.
Yeah, exactly. And that's another thing with talking about Hamilton. Mm. He's gone into a blank canvas.
Mm.
So that's another reason why I think it's going to be so interesting because the car's going to be new for everyone.
Pretty much.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, on that note, we'll see you in Phillip Island hopefully by the end of the year.
Get us box tickets.
Yeah, pit tickets.
Yeah, you guys can welcome in the garage anytime. Thanks,
for sure.
You can
thank
the car if you like.
Well, man.
Can I drive it now as well?
I don't see why not.
Do you want to ride off your car? Put him in it.
Oh, no. Purple sectors, man.
Yeah. Thank you so much for coming on, man. It's been a pleasure.
No, thank you for having me. It's been great.
Get to chat.
It was really good to talk, F1.
No, it was, actually. It's been great to catch up with you guys again. It's been a long time.
It has. Please go and follow Giuliano Senese Racing on Instagram. Give him a follow, like, send him a message. Mm-hmm. If you're a sponsor.
Any businesses, exactly. Jump on.
He's up and coming. So.
That's right.
And a big thank you to you, as always, for tuning in to another episode of the Almost Made It podcast. If you haven't already, please, please follow us on Spotify.
YouTube.
Subscribe to YouTube.
TikTok, Instagram.
We'll
be back with the 11th episode next week.
Number 11.
We're going for 20.
20?
Yeah. Nah, we're going for 100. What am I talking about?
All right, we're just blubbing on now. That's all right. It.
We'll see you next week.
See you then.
Joe.